buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I think it's 10 o'clock.
Is it 10 o'clock? 10 o'clock.
Thank you very much. It's been a busy week,
hasn't it?
Thank you very much, Renee. Thank you very much. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, now's the time to call in. And we're here for 2 hours. And sitting next to me is my wife and business partner for the last 145 years.
Yeah, I feel like it.
Just keep making fun of me. It's not that good at 5 minutes into the show and you're already...
I'm hoping you'll fire me so I can go do my other stuff.
Well, that ain't going to happen. I can tell you that much. Okay. All righty. Well, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, they've been in Mesa providing expert auto care, maintenance services, and everything from the big jobs to the small jobs. They're on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Main Street, east of Stapley, the south side of the road. They have ASE-certified technicians, and they will send you friendly reminders when your car may be due for service. Of course, they don't know the exact miles, so they typically put in the miles you're due at this time. So if you're 5,000 miles away, you don't have to take it in. But they do play by the rules, and they're a really good shop. Or I wouldn't be talking about them. So that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley, the south side of the road, and the only shop in Mesa that I actually feel comfortable recommending. All right. Oh, my goodness. We've got a caller already. Gil, you are an amazing person. I'm all ears.
Say hello to Martin.
Martin, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I got a problem with a 2000 Taurus. Just to give you a little background, I replaced the AC compressor the other day, but I also noticed that the fans don't come on when the AC comes on. There's some issues there I've got to deal with. Anyway, right after I did that, I started the vehicle, it's running fine, and all of a sudden it quits. And I crank and crank and crank, nothing happens. I double-check that there's fuel there, I can smell it out of the gas tank, I know there's air, and it just wouldn't turn over. So I thought, ignition module, dumb me. I went and changed it. Nothing happened. But it had done this intermittently. It would start and run great. The next time I started, nothing. This morning I was checking things again, and it started, and now it's running, but right in the middle of running, it just quit. So I've got, obviously, I think, an electrical issue. I'm just wondering if you have any wild ideas of what I might try to check, ignition or key or some other control module. I just don't know.
Well, you always start, you missed an important part of all of that. This is a crank, no start, 90% of the time. This is a crank.
That's what it is now. When it first did it, it would crank and it wouldn't start. I'd shut the key off and then it would start right away. And it's progressively gotten worse, where now it's 90% crank and maybe 5 or 10% it starts. Like I said, this morning, it's running and then just shut off by itself.
I was trying to help everybody else understand that what you said, 90% of what you said, doesn't really mean anything if we're standing on the other side of the counter. So this is a crank, no start, intermittently it does start. And you said you checked ignition, but you didn't check fuel. So you don't know if it's a fuel supply problem or not.
I did check fuel.
And how did you do that?
Two things. Before I checked the ignition, I had it crank, and I went back to the exhaust, and I could smell raw gas.
That's not even a valid test.
Okay. I also went to their fuel rail, and I could hear the pump come on prime. I went to the fuel rail and put the valve off and drained it. You know, it relieved the gas. I cranked it again, and there was pressure there. So, okay, maybe that's not good enough, but I'm assuming that was telling me that there's fuel there.
Okay, well, I don't have the ability to sniff a tailpipe and tell you whether or not there's fuel in it. And I've been doing this for 39 years. And you certainly don't have the ability to release the pressure at the Schrader valve and come to a conclusion that that's, in fact, what needs to be done. You need to use a fuel pressure gauge. And the fact that it intermittently runs would suggest that it's a fuel starvation problem. The fact that you can cycle the key on, then that also indicates it. So this is what you're going to do from this point on rather than spend a whole lot of money. And this has nothing to do with the AC, by the way. What you're
going to do is
you're going to turn the key to the on position and count to five. I didn't say crank. I said the on position. You'll turn it off. You'll turn it back on and count to five. Then you'll turn it off, and then you'll go into crank mode. If it starts and runs during that period of time, almost every time we have primed the fuel pump three times or two times.
Yes.
So, and what we're doing is building pressure. Now, it doesn't mean it's the fuel pump. It means that we don't have enough pressure. So the question now is the backflow valve, check valve in the fuel pump bad? Is the fuel pump bad? Is the fuel pump relay bad? Or is the fuel pressure regulator bad? The fuel pressure regulator's job is to ensure that we have front fuel. Otherwise, it's a faucet at the end of the loop. So if we want to boost pressure, we shut the faucet. If we want to drop pressure, we open the faucet. When the fuel pressure regulator oftentimes goes bad, it lowers the pressure and returns a whole bunch of fuel to the tank. So you really haven't even eliminated spark yet, because when it dies, you have to check for spark. And you have to pull a plug wire and put an old spark plug in there and hold it to ground and crank it over. But it's going to not run because of spark or fuel, and I don't think you're close to either one of those.
I neglected to mention, I did have a spark plug, the little light you put in line, and I did that on a two or three of them when it was cranking, and I didn't get any flashing light.
Okay. So you replaced the ignition module. Where was that located?
It's located up on the, as you open it, looking straight into the hood, it's a little to the right. This is a transverse engine, so it's the front kind of right corner of the engine.
Okay.
It's a big piece, you know, a big, large, heavy thing within the six wires, you know, and then the coil wire coming into it.
Okay. All right. Well, you know,
I know.
It's kind of one of those things, Martin, where I say this and you say I already checked it, and then I say this and you already checked it. But I'm going to go back to what you can argue with, and that's fuel or spark, and I don't think you've eliminated either one of them. What bothers me the most is, how much did you spend on the module?
It was $89 at the AutoZone.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what you – now, do you have a can of propane, or do you have, like, one of those little propane torches?
Yeah, I thought about trying that when I just didn't, because when I saw that the spark wasn't – doing last night, it was nothing was happening. I just, again, I've had, you know, older cars, I've had the little ignition smaller modules that go out, and I just assumed that was it. Like I said,
well,
maybe not the smartest thing, but
no. Yeah, and by the time you get done guessing, you're going to feel really bad, because typically most shops would diagnose this for, you know, what you spent guessing or even less. The thing of it is the ignition module is only one of the things. We're picking up the pickup assembly, or we're picking up the circuit that the engine's cranking from the distributor or from a crankshaft sensor.
Right.
I'm familiar with your 18-year-old car, but I'm guessing here. So the question is you can replace the module, but again, it was a guess. So we can eliminate the pickup assembly or the crankshaft sensor, and you don't have the ability, no matter what your toolbox looks like, to test either one of those. So
no, I understand
There'll be a time where you just kind of give up the ghost, and you know, the thing of it is where's the fuel level right now?
It is full, and actually the vehicle is just not too far from full.
Okay, all right. Well, that helps me, because that means the water pump or the fuel pump is being cooled, and the tank isn't an eighth of the tank where your wife would probably leave it, and my wife probably leaves it there as well. So if we're covering up the fuel pump, then at least we're lubricating and we're cooling it, and that should be good enough. But anyway, thank you very much, Martin. Good luck to you, buddy. Good luck, and I'm just going to put no crank, or crank, but no start.
Yeah, and it's probably better that he goes and has it tested and before spending a whole bunch more money, because he could spend a lot of money doing all those parts.
Well, and YouTube University kind of helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not too long ago, just for fun, and I do this actually on a regular basis, I'll take a particular situation and I'll Google it, and I'll go into YouTube University, and I'll go to all those different places, and they have Ford forms and Chevrolet forms and all that kind of stuff, and I'll look to see what they say it is.
Right.
And that's quite a bit different than the rest of them, because it's just really a matter of what they say it is.
Yeah.
So it's really rare that you're going to find the answer. The Honda quad that we have here at the ranch that
sure.
we use. Remember when it didn't shift electronically?
Right.
Okay. You can't believe U2 University was, oh, it's going to be the switch. No, it's going to be the solenoid. No, it's going to be the neutral safety switch. No, it's going to be fuel. No, it's going to be spark. Now, you know what it was?
No.
The battery.
Oh, yeah. I remember because you had to take that off. Okay, now, he didn't say anything about a check engine light being on either. Would he have had one?
Well, it didn't seem like it was running long enough to set the lights.
Yeah.
Remember, he said sometimes it would start and then
2 minutes.
Die.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go to the other caller. Who we got next?
We have Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Mark, quick question. I've heard you explain at different times, when you have a vehicle, a car with all-wheel drive, and it's got some miles on it, and you have a tire go bad, you should replace all the tires. Did I hear that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So what I drive is an 07 Toyota FJ, and it's a manual transmission, so it's full-time four-wheel drive. And I'm driving out to California next week, and I have my tires that are on are all 285/70R17. My spare is a 265. Can I run that at all as a spare if I happen to need it?
Yes. Yes, you can. I mean, I would. What I don't want to do is I don't want you to hop on the freeway from Riverside, California, and come all the way to Phoenix. But certainly you can use the spare appropriately to get to the next shop or the next discount tire or whatever. Yes, you can.
Okay. I would inflate
the spare to its maximum written on the sidewall so we can kind of blow up the tire, the circumference of the tire. Now, give me the two sizes again on that, please.
The four I have on there are Michelin 285/70/17s. They're on an all-terrain tire.
Okay.
And then the spare is a 265. That's the factory
okay.
Size.
265/70. Okay. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we've got an insignificant difference with respect to the tire circumference, so to speak. The 70 series is the relationship between the sidewall and stuff like that. 17 is the wheel size, but 285 and 265, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not real worried about that. But like I said, again, long trip, I would pass on that one.
Okay, so just get it fixed. If I have a problem, I mean, I only have 10,000 miles on the tires, and I don't expect any issues. By the way, the tire says I can maximum 65 PSI. What do you think for that vehicle would be a good air pressure to run in? I just run what's on my door?
Okay, yeah, I want you to look on your door, but does the tire say maximum load 55?
65.
65?
The maximum PSI 65, yeah.
Wow.
That's
it's a 10-ply tire, I think.
A 10-ply tire?
I think so. It's a Michelin, it's a Muddins M&S AT tire.
Okay, all-terrain. All-terrain.
All-terrain, yes.
M&S
yes.
is Muddins Snow all-terrain tire. I don't know. I mean, I always like to run my cars at maximum, what the tire says. You sacrifice a little bit of ride, but you get better fuel economy. The tire lasts longer, and if you hit a curb, the tire will bounce you off the curb as opposed to cutting the sidewall. So there's lots of benefits, but I think because we're so close in size, I would look at the door sticker, then I'd probably draw the middle out of it. So let's pretend that sticker for 44 and you got 50... what is it? 65?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So
yes.
45 to 65, I'd probably pick the middle and go to 55, and that's where I'd go. Okay?
Well, that sounds like great advice, Mark. Thanks, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, too. Same to you. We're going to come back in just a second, but the lines are wide open, and Gil is snoring in my ears. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Thank you, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here at your service. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about Kurtz real quick, and then we're going to go to the phones. Kurtz is a great shop. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner.
Kurt,
Jeff, and Eric. Boy, it's a team that you couldn't draw better cards to. Kurt's a master, and so are the two boys. All three of them work on cars. They help one another, and three heads are better than one. And this is a situation where there's no question about that. So if you're looking for a car repair shop, they've been open since 1987. They work on both gas and diesels. They have ASE certified techs and master techs sitting there ready for your car. So he works on domestic and gas and diesel and all that stuff. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, called Kurtz Auto Repair. Okay, we're going to go to Jared. Jared, good morning. How can I help you?
Well, I've got a 2011 Versa, a Nissan Versa, and the major symptom is occasionally the shift will go from first to second. It won't shift to electronically. It'll just slam into gear to second.
Okay.
The tap will go to zero, and sometimes it won't start. And the cruise control will blink and be inoperative. And it will not do it regularly. You can't make it do it. And just seems to be intermittent.
Okay. And when you say it, you have a situation where you say, you know, you it's intermittent, you only have two choices to make here. Choice number one is easy, and that's guess until you fix it. That's not always the best idea. The second choice is this. Wait till it gets it worse and easier to find. Now, I'm going to assume you haven't checked said anything about the check engine light, so that's not been on. Is that correct?
That is on.
Okay. Well, that makes a big difference. We'd want to look at that. I'm thinking that I'm going to guess here. I don't want you to go out and work on your car based on some idiot on the radio guessing based on looking through your eyes, but I'm thinking you got a speed problem, a speed sensor problem that would affect the transmission and disable the cruise control. So we may have lost the speed sensor signal from the car to the computer. Therefore, the computer is shifting it out of whack and the cruise control has been disabled. But that's a wild guess. Okay, but with the check engine light is going to be, tell us what city the problem's in. It's in Denver, Colorado. Good. That could be climate control. That could be engine. That could be emissions. That could be transmission. But that's kind of the city, and then we have to find the address and the street number. So this isn't really a tough one. Do you have a garage you deal with already?
Yes, I do. I've gone to them, and they tell me the same thing the dealer tells me, that okay. They can't do anything about it unless it's misbehaving at the time of bringing it in.
Okay, so the check engine light wasn't there when you took it in, or it was there?
No, the check engine light was on.
Okay.
But they said it was just kind of some obscure code.
Okay. Well, here's something you can do. We're going to kind of do something different. I want you, when you drive it, I want you to manually shift it. So when you go, instead of going to drive, I want you to shift all the way to the bottom of the letters. And then I want you to go, and then I want you to click the shifter, then click the shifter. I want you to manually shift it and see what happens. That might help us all close in on what the problem is.
I have done that, and it makes no difference. Another thing, too, when it does misbehave, let's say for a better term, if I just pull over, shut the engine off, put in park, start it up again, and everything's happy.
Okay. Well, that's with any computer. Sometimes you shut the car off, and it's called a key cycle. So you shut it off, turn it back on, and everything's gone. That doesn't really help us, but it does strongly suggest we have an electrical malfunction somewhere. But, you know, the bad news is if you wait till it gets worse and easier to find, the worst case that can happen is it breaks down and it doesn't start. But if you have insurance that covers towing, or if you have some kind of a road service thing, it's no real big deal. But, of course, it could be in an unfortunate circumstance and, you know, you have to go to the bathroom or your wife wants a drink and you're on your way to the bar or something like that. I don't know. But that could – it had just – but you – I agree with the shop and the dealer in the sense that in the absence of any definitive code, then we have to wait till it gets worse to easier to find. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Jared. Tom, you're up next. Oh, that was Tom.
No, that was Jared.
That was Jared. Okay, well, then I wrote it
you're
wrong.
You're so mixed
Tom,
up.
Tom, I'm ready, buddy. How can I help you?
Okay, good morning. I have a 97 Dodge Dakota with a V6, and it seems like every year I'm replacing the battery on it. Is that possibly because, like, a bad quality battery, or is there something else that may be the cause? Because it's putting out enough voltage, I think 14 volts, that the alternator's putting out, but it just seems like every single year I'm having to replace a battery in it.
Okay. I think they're just, unfortunately, we need to test everything when you have a year-old battery. And that includes, we look at the condition of the battery, we look at the tag that says 400 CCA, we test it, and it better be at least 400 CCA. We look at the voltage, and it should be 14. Then we crank it over, and it should not drop below 9.6. Then we do a volt drop test between the positive and negative circuits. So if we go to the ground of the engine where the starter's at, and if we go from there and we find out that everywhere else in the ground circuit it's 13.2, and then we find this circuit it's 9.8, then we go, oh, we're having a tough time providing a ground to the starter, which would make the battery look bad. So there's just a little bit more, and here's the good news. Forget about the three-whiskered kid at the auto repair shop, because first of all, you always test a component where it lives. Okay? You can't take your alternator and your starter and your battery down there, because the little three-whiskered kid can't do much. The information he gives you, and his focus, in Mark's opinion, is to sell you stuff. So, what are we on an electrical systems check? Where are we?
It's like $45.
Okay, so.
With tax and everything.
And we're in the middle of the world because Andy, our daughter, does make sure that the average on the low side is 35 and the average on the high side is 55, and we pick the middle.
Right.
But I'm telling you, that would be something. Next time you have a battery problem, that would be a. Now, a drain or a short could do that as well. And so, when you shut the car off, we have a draw. And for us, that's easy to fix because we have inductive amp probes and we wrap the cable. We see the draw in an amp
probe. 2 minutes.
Then we start disconnecting things until it goes away. And pulling fuses until it goes away. And then you look to see what's on the fuse. I make fun of how easy that is, but identifying the circuit is one thing. Identifying the problem in that circuit is quite another. So I just think,
that's true.
And you're not going to buy, you know, 89% of all the batteries in the United States are made by Johnson Controls. They have all these batteries come down the chute, and it's a, you know, a 7850 battery, which is a model, and the 50 is the months it's warranty, and it has 47 different tags on it. So the Walmart battery and the Costco battery and the Atlas battery and the blah 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 battery, they're all the same with a different tag.
Yeah.
So it's not likely that you're going to have, and that's the reason I tell people shop price on batteries. Who cares what name it's on, because it's the same battery.
And sometimes we find. Have you had a security system or anything put in it recently, or?
No, it used to have one, but I cut all that out.
Okay, because sometimes we find that
one
people just put something in there, and that is what causes the drain.
Drains it.
You're absolutely right. All righty. Well, Tom, good luck to you. I appreciate your call.
Okay.
Bob and Benjamin, you stay right there because we're going to get you. I've only got 45 seconds to go, and, of course, my wife's telling me what to do, and that's the reason why she's on this radio show is to point at the screen and say you're up against a break or you need to shut up or calm down and all that kind of stuff. When we come back, if you're looking for a car, I'm going to describe to you a car that's a 2011 Camry SE, 3.5 liter, 93,000 miles, original car that's just beautiful. It's white with fancy wheels, and it's got dark tinted windows, and it's just really a nice car. And this car has hauled our daughter and her young baby all over. So it's a good, safe car. And she's going to sell it because she bought a new Ford. And that's what really makes me mad is the family is changing. And we'll be back in a minute. We're going to go to some callers. And, hey, hon, I'm going to do a caller and then a spot, caller and a spot. Ready? So, Bob, you're up first. How can I help you today?
Mark, did you get the picture I sent you this week of my new tire gauge? I emailed you a picture.
You know, I
don't remember. I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
It's a long acre. It's a dial gauge. It goes up to 60 pounds. And I really like it because it holds the pressure till you release it. And then it's got a bleed off button where you can bleed the pressure down to exactly what you like.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't have a battery because it's just a dial, you know, that goes around. So you never have to worry about replacing a battery or anything.
Okay. So is it a gun with a hose, and on the end of the hose there's a clip?
No, it's just a dial. It's like a big rubber dial that's like 6 inches in diameter.
Okay.
So old guys like me can read the numbers without having to put on their reading glasses and stuff.
Okay. So it's a big round dial that's got a stick coming out of it, and on the end of that stick is
where... It's got a rubber hose.
Oh, it's got
like
a rubber hose.
A long rubber hose.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All righty. All right. That's something that we have as well, but the one I like the best is this little electronic one that's very small, has a small snout on it, and the whole thing fits in the palm of your hand. But yours is fine, and I would use that if I'm going to do tractor tires and stuff because I need the heavier volume or I need the higher limits. But, no, there's nothing wrong with that. But I'll tell you what happens on my social media. I get a lot of stuff, and my daughter filters it for me because, as you can imagine, sometimes I might get 20 emails a day about car issues. So she helps me with some of those. I do the majority of them myself. But so I apologize that I didn't see your gauge, but obviously it didn't make it to my desk. And if you want to blame someone, her name is Andy. All righty.
That's all right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much, Bob. And that's an air gauge issue. All right. And now let's take Benjamin real quick. Benjamin, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. We sure appreciate you out here.
Thank you.
I got a 2003 Lexus ES300 with a V6. Just failed emissions. It's got a catalytic converter problem. So I'm a proud graduate of a YouTube university, and I found out that it's got two catalytic converters.
Yeah.
So I got to replace them both.
Well, you've just jumped over everything. Here's
okay.
The problem. How many miles are on it?
200,000.
Okay. There's generally going to be an oxygen sensor, and I don't know about your O3, but there could be one in the front of the cat and in the back of the cat. Now think about this. We're going to send the exhaust that contains a lot of fuel that we don't really want. So as it goes past the first O2 sensor, the O2 sensor goes, oh, rich, 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 too much fuel, too much fuel. As it goes through the catalytic converter, which is nothing more than a grill that you grill steaks on, but it's red hot and it's lit, then the other oxygen sensor on the backside goes, clean air. Okay, that's what happens. So if one of those two is bad, and let's say the front one says lean and the back one says lean, then the computer goes, well, I'm going to open up the fuel faucet to see if I can get that front one to say rich, and nothing happens. So it then sets a code and says, you know what? I've got a catalytic converter efficiency problem. It doesn't mean the cat's bad. We've got a variety of sensors that report to the computer about how the engine is, what's the engine exhausting and what's coming out of the tailpipe. So I think, if you want to go replace the two converters, you're going to spend $1,000.
Or more.
Or more.
They are expensive.
And on a Lexus, it's $2,000.
Yeah.
So I would think, do you have a garage that you respect and use on patronize?
No, actually, I looked on your website and I found one up in North Phoenix, but it's about $150 for the diagnostic, and they don't apply it to the final cost. So,
well, you're not going to find very few people that are going to do that because there's two separate operations. Now, did he say that the $150 is the top end?
Yeah, well, he only quoted one number.
Okay. That's something that you can ask. You say, is that to not to exceed? Because most of us are going to give you a range. Now, Renee, you just answered the phone.
Yeah.
He wants a code for a catalytic converter efficiency.
Yeah, 79 to 129 is what we quote.
But there are times that we go 75 to 150.
Absolutely.
Especially when I've had it to 10 other shops and nobody can find it, then it goes to 200 on the top end.
Yeah.
Because, well, if one guy can't find it, it's no big deal. But if five shops can't find it, then it's going to be a little harder. But in your particular case, maybe call one of the other shops in the area and see what they say. Now, did you call the one on 40th and Greenway by chance?
No, it was up on Bell.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's what I would do. And then you can call back the Bell store and say, is that a not to exceed or is that the end? Because a lot of people will just say it's 150. Well, they know that if they get to 89 or 90 and we've already got it diagnosed, then we're done. But in their defense, working on a catalytic converter efficiency code, is a lot more work than just looking for an engine misfire, because we have to verify the front and back O2 sensors on both cats. So we have to create a rich condition to see both of them scream rich. Then we got to create a lean condition, see both of them scream lean. So if one of them doesn't scream with the signal we're sending, then that's going to be the bad one. Then we have to go in and physically look at the O2 sensor, and if it's all crusted up or burn up, and it's especially if it's the post one, we have a problem we're going to have to also address. So that's kind of a tough one, just because the square box of the testing procedure is kind of wide on a catalytic converter test.
It takes work for them to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, but don't just replace the catalytic converters because that's just a really bad idea. So I think you'll be happy with just spending a whole lot less having somebody specifically diagnose the problem. Okay?
It sounds good. Thanks, Mark.
All righty. And those are the tough ways to go. Okay. All right, Steve, you got to stay there because I'm on a break, and I'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. The phone number, if you'd like to join us for conversation or if you have a car problem or something like that, let's just stick to the symptoms. What kind of car you got, how many miles it's got on it, and what kind of symptoms do you have? 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All five lines are open right now, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is on 40th Street in Washington. He's been around since 1968. Phil has been around since Fred Flintstone times. And we had stone cars and stone wheels. He knows transmissions because he started when they first came out. So he understands the fundamentals of using fluid to do different stuff. Because that's what a transmission is all about. High pressure fluid, and we open this valve and close this one for first gear, and then we open this one and close this one for second gear, and this one is, both of them are open or closed for neutral. That's what it's all about. The old transmissions, we used different throttle stuff to make it happen, and on the newer ones, we use electronics to open and close those valves. He knows that. So if you live in Phoenix and you're looking for a transmission shop that'll even take a ride with you, and you can show them what the problem is, then Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. So I'm going to talk about Andy's car. My daughter's car is a 2011 Camry SE with a 3.5 liter V6 motor, 93,000 miles, original owner, non-smoking, automatic, very clean. And surprisingly enough, she has all the maintenance records.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Now, on the maintenance records we provide, obviously, we're wiping out the prices because those are in-house cars. Mm-hmm. So it's a situation where you're going to get what we did, but you're not going to get any of the pricing because that wouldn't reflect what you'd pay for anyway. It's mechanically sound. It has cold AC, leather interior with seat heaters, power everything, Sirius XM capabilities, sunroof, 6 CD changer, white exterior with a gray interior, and just like my daughter would do, because we do this for our customers.
Yeah.
We do this kind of analysis for them and help them right there at. She says the KBB, Kelley Blue Book Private Party, goes up to 11.2, mm-hmm. and she's got it priced at 11,000 or OBO, or yeah. best offer. Yeah. Now, she's kind of a whittler, so she's not going to go down too far.
No.
But this also has really nifty black wheels with rubber band tires.
Yeah.
So the car sits a little lower than normal, but it's got a very sporty look. Mm-hmm. And she's hauled our granddaughter, Josie, all over hell and creation in the back seat of that car. So there's plenty of room for. And I think we've ridden in the back seat when her and Phil take us to
it's
dinner.
It's real comfortable. So it's a nice car. It's the bigger Camry or whatever. I think she has it parked out on Warner today. So if anybody wanted to see it,
okay,
Warner and Hardy.
Or you can email me, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com, and I will put you in touch with Andy, and she'll call you back.
She put her email on there, too. Salem Boys Auto.
Andy at salemboysauto.com, and Andy spelled with the I.
A-N-D-I, yes.
You know what? Look at me now. I was going to spell it. Did you think I couldn't spell it?
I wasn't sure, because you don't even spell my name right most of the time.
I don't even like you. All righty, Gil, we got somebody in the wings. Who is it?
Oh, yes, we do. Alan is next.
Alan, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you. I've got a 95 Ford Explorer, runs great, except that the oil gauge on the dash, it starts in the center where it should, I guess, and after driving just a little bit, city or highway, the needle moves almost all the way to the high point and sits there about an eighth inch away. I checked the oil constantly, and it's fine. Do you think I should be concerned about this? Or?
Well, this is one of those situations where if you want to guess, it won't cost much money. The very first thing I would do is here's the option. As a shop owner, I would say to you, okay, Alan, what I'd like to do is go find the oil pressure switch, which talks to the gauge, and I'd like to go ahead and take it out and screw in a manual gauge, and then I'm going to go drive it. And I'm going to see if the manual gauge represents what you see on the gauge, then I really need to know what the low side is. So if it goes down to 20, 25 pounds of pressure, and it normally runs up to 40, I'm not going to be concerned with that. But if it gets down there at 8 or 10, I'm going to be concerned. That's going to cost some money because I have to take the oil pressure switch out. I have to put a manual gauge in it. Then I got to go drive it. Then I got to come back and call you with an estimate. I would suggest, if you knew somebody, to just replace the oil pressure switch. That's all. Make sure you get the right one. They're going to be VIN sensitive. Otherwise, you need to have the VIN when you order it. And I would just replace the oil pressure switch. But I also want to ask you this. On the gauge with 100% being, you know, to the right and zero being to the left, where does it run normally? Give me the high and the low using a zero to 100 scale. So when it's low, is it below half or is it below a quarter?
Oh, wait a second. No, I meant that it's just a needle and there's the low, you know, if it's low, and then there's the high pressure. It doesn't go low. It goes towards the high pressure.
Okay. So what you're saying is there's actually some gold posts in that gauge. There's two vertical pieces, and then there's a horizontal hoop. So we have a range defined on the gauge on your Ford, yes?
Yeah. Well, basically, it's dead center. The needle's straight up.
Okay, I understand but that. But what I'm saying is there is a mark on the gauge that gives you, like, don't go lower than this and don't go higher than this, right?
Not really. It's okay. Just the H on the left and, I think, L on the right. And it goes towards the H, the high point.
Okay. I don't know of an oil pressure switch or a temperature gauge that starts on hot on the left. Usually it's low pressure or lower temperature.
No, it starts in the middle.
Okay. All right. If the gauge varies from the middle, a little bit to the low side, a little bit to the high side, I don't think you have anything to worry about, especially since you haven't said anything about the motor clacking or clicking or any abnormal noises. So I think what we have is just a discrepancy between, I know that there's goalposts on your gauge, and that's a range. So the range says, here's the lowest mark and here's the highest mark. So as long as you're in that range of what they call the goalposts, then you're fine. Now, another thing you can do is check to see if there's a red oil light. So turn your key to the on position. Don't start the car. Let the dashboard light up. If you have a red oil light, then the sender, when it drops and says, whoa, oil pressure's getting too low, then the computer will turn on the red oil light, and that will then tell you you have a problem. Now, on the high side, if you've got too high oil pressure and then it comes down, or if it starts low and goes high, I'm not real concerned about that, although what you're describing is just the opposite of what we normally see. We normally see it start high and move to the low. So in any way at all, as long as it's in the gauge, now you can open up your owner's manual and look, but they're going to have a picture of your oil pressure gauge, and they're going to tell you this is the lowest spot, this is the highest we're looking for. Or just stop by your garage and just show them what you're talking about. That's something that almost every garage I know of would just talk to you for 3 or 4 minutes and look at your gauge and tell you what too low is and tell you what too high is. I think that would be an appropriate thing to do. All right, well, good luck, Alan. Good luck with your 95 Explorer. And in
the
absence of clattering, I think you're okay. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, you're welcome, Alan. Larry Harker's Auto's at 38th Avenue in Indian School.
why do I like Larry Harker's Auto? It's because Bob and Ellen, husband and wife, run it. Ellen runs the front counter, and you're not going to get to talk to Bob unless she wants you to. She also is really good at finding what you need because she knows what questions to ask, and she knows what to write down that's important. That's kind of important. Now, women don't have that problem, but men do. Women come in, and they'll even make the noise in a lobby full of people. Quack, quack, quack. My car goes quack, quack, quack. It's funny because women will tell us the symptoms. Guys will want to tell us all their years of experience on YouTube. But Larry Harker's Auto, Bob's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. Auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, engines, transmissions, failed emissions. He has all the equipment necessary to diagnose and repair all of that stuff. So they also work on foreign and domestic. Not too long ago, I sent a customer to Bob, and the customer's story starts out the same. I've had it to every shop in town, and nobody can fix it. Bob fixed it. Mm-hmm. Bob fixed it to the customer's satisfaction. And there was no question he fixed it, because the customer said within hours after I got my truck back, everything was fine. So if you're looking for a good shop and you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, then I would go to Larry Harker's Auto. And if you have a problem and you say, I've had it to everybody in town and nobody can find it and fix it, then you might go talk to Bob at Larry Harker's Auto. All righty, we've got a caller, right?
That's right. Buddy is next.
Buddy, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a 97 Toyota Corona, and it will not let me ride in the rain with it. And when I try and start in the morning, forget it. What's going on with my car?
Okay, so we have to back up and do a little better description. So when it's wet and raining, the car won't start or run?
Won't start and won't drive.
Okay, And if it's dry as a bone, it starts and runs all day fine.
You got it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to think out loud here. The car has no idea if it's raining or not. The computer has no idea. However, we have a primary ignition system and a secondary ignition system. The secondary ignition system is the spark side of that system. So I'm thinking that the water is contaminating a connection like at the coil, and that we've got a broken tower on the coil, and when it rains there's a lot of moisture in the air, and the moisture is redirecting the spark to one of the terminals on the coil. Or the coil wire could be bad from the coil to the distributor cap, or the distributor cap could be cracked, and that's causing the rain and the moisture to affect where the spark is being sent. So, to be perfectly honest with you, this
that's
ain't going to be
a weird.
It's not going to be hard,
okay.
Because I would if it was my, in what part of town do you live in?
Phoenix.
Okay, north, south, east, west.
West.
Okay, West Phoenix. You can go to Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He'd be a good guy. But this is what I do. I'd make sure you brought it in when it was a good hot day and it was running just fine. Now, I want you to know that this is highly technical from this point forward, so if I lose you, just let me know. I would lift the hood, and I would get a spray bottle from my wife who sprays her plants with water, and I would start spraying the ignition system with that water, and pretty soon I would hear real loud. And then I'd look down and see this spark going crazy. Then I'd take an air hose, and I'd also hear the motor start running poorly. And then I'd blow all the water off the coil tower, and all of a sudden it starts running good.
Tumen.
And then I would call you and tell you I had $450 worth of diagnostic charges and 30
yeah.
bucks to replace the coil. Is that okay with you?
Oh, yeah, perfectly.
And, of course, I'm glad you're laughing because I was teasing you. But really and truly,
right.
that's what needs to happen. If the rain is the common denominator, it's going to be something in the secondary system. So the coil sends hot spark to the distributor. The distributor sends it to the rotor. The rotor sends it to the individual cylinders. Somewhere in there, water is redirecting the spark. That's all there is to it.
Right.
All right?
Sounds fair to me.
Okay. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
You betcha.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
It's one that you don't hear very often.
No.
It's certainly one that we have fixed in 39 years, I can tell you that much. But water creates all kinds of issues. I remember a lady coming in, and she says, when it's raining, my air conditioning blows fog. But her windshield was leaking into the evaporator case, and the air conditioning fan was picking it up and blowing it out.
Yeah.
And so it was come out in a mist kind of thing.
Hmm. So, well, it's good. It doesn't rain here too much, so we don't have that problem too often.
No, that's true. That's true. All righty. If you'd like, we have another hour of the show, so you're welcome to stack up the line, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and there's five of them. Gil will handle it, and as soon as you call in, he gives me the air gun noise, and that tells me that you're on the queue, in the queue, and I will take you just like that.
There you go.
Now, we used to have a doorbell, but people complained that when Gil pushed the doorbell, their dogs would bark. Like ours do.
Ooh, that's right.
That's it. So they're listening to the radio, and they're in the kitchen, and Gil hits the doorbell, and the dogs start barking. So we went to an air gun. We think it's more appropriate. 602-508-0960.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to be done with this particular radio show sometime at about noontime. So you're welcome to call us now and give us a call. And we've got two callers on the line. I'm going to get straight to them. And anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you're more than welcome to give us a call. We'll get to you as quickly as we can. Let's go to Terry. Terry, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2014 Toyota Camry XLE. And it's got, I believe, a 3.5-liter four-cylinder engine.
Okay.
And when I start it up after it sits overnight or something, you know, for a longer period of time, I can hear the engine rattle just for a second or, you know, as when it you start it up. And the oil pressure light just barely blinks on it. You know, that little oil.
Sure.
Looks like an oil can or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it's only got 40,000 miles on the car. I had bought it this spring from a dealer, and it's a lease car, so it's only a one-owner car. And I've got 0-20 synthetic oil in it. Have you ever heard of any issues like that?
No, and I'm not quite sure I would be worried about that. My first question out of my mouth, you covered. That car takes 0-20 synthetic, and there's some older guys that want to put 30 weight or 1030 or 1040 or 2050 in their cars because they like the pillow mentality. But your car, had it had that oil, would be the problem. Here's what.
Well, go
ahead.
When I first bought the car, I noticed that. So then I changed the dealer had just changed the oil on it. And so I changed the oil filter to an OEM Toyota oil filter, and it didn't make any difference at all.
Okay, know? I could have told you that. Toyota's was the one, or one of the many companies who got in trouble by the government, and as a result of that, the Magnuson-Moss Act was passed that says this: if Eureka says you have to use their bags, they have to give them to you for free. If Toyota says you have to use their oil filter, they have to give them to you for free. That's called the Magnuson-Moss Act. It's kind of like the dealers that say you can only use their parts. Well, they better give them to you for free. So and keep in mind that virtually every oil filter that's sold in the United States is made by one of three companies, and all they do is paint the label on differently. So it's not that big of a deal. You know, I tell people shop by price. That's what I do. So there's oil filters out there for $1.50 that I screw on your car sometimes if they're on special. Most of the time, they're going to cost me $3 to $5 a piece. But in your car, here's what you could do that would make you feel better. Have the oil changed, and then at 1,000 miles, have them pull a small sample of oil. And if you go on the internet and you go oil analysis, there'll be all kinds of companies that will run an analysis, and they'll send you a little tube. So you do an analysis at 1,000 miles, and you do an analysis at 2,000 miles, and what we're looking for is growth. So if the aluminum number is 8 and the 10,000-mile one,
at the 1,000-mile one, then we better not have more than 8 on the second one. But if it's 8 on the first 1,000-mile oil analysis and it's 28 or 30 on the second one, then we've got something coming apart in the engine. And oil analysis covers all the metals in your engine. Cast iron, steel, brass, chrome, everything. So, and that doesn't cost much. I think you can find them for like $8, $10, $12. But I'll tell you right now, I'm not worried about what you're talking about. If that were my car, I wouldn't care. It could be a whole lot of things, but the fact that it pumps up quickly says that there's no real problem. And oil leaves a film on the motor where that small amount of time, which might really effectively be 3 or 4 or 5 seconds, maybe 10 at the most, is no problem. And to show you how that is, take a screwdriver and dip it in a quart of oil and then hang it. And then the next morning, go out there and just slide your fingers down the shaft of the screwdriver, and it'll still be covered in oil. So, and there's nothing hot when you first start it in the morning either. So I'm not quite sure that I'd be real concerned. How many miles did you have on that?
I bought it with like 34,000, and it's just barely, I'm just ready for an oil change at 40,000.
Okay.
It's 2014.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's an oil filter.
I don't believe it's an oil filter because I changed that out and it still does the same thing.
Yeah, so, you know, if you wanted to do, you know, let me give you an idea on how I use the analysis. It's uncommon, but my shop makes mistakes. So this little old lady brings her car in for an oil change, and we don't check to make sure that we remove the old gasket filter, or the filter gasket, which is a big black O-ring. So we put the new filter on top of the old gasket, and as soon as it develops any kind of oil pressure, it blows that top gasket out, and you got oil all over the ground. So she's about a mile away, and she sees smoke. She's got people honking at her, and she drives a little bit further to get off the road. She calls us. We send a tow truck. We get it to the shop, and we fill a pack of oil. We fix the filter, but we're not sure if this motor took a beating. So we did just exactly what I told you. We ran a 1,000-mile test on it, and it never made the 1,000 miles. So we replaced the engine. The idea is this happens to all of us, but the oil analysis, if that story turned around and the customer said, I want you to buy the car, I know you hurt my motor, I would say, hey, let's do an oil analysis, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And if we don't have any growth of any kind of metal inside that analysis, then I didn't hurt your motor. And so, you know, I gave you back the same motor you had. Through the grace of God, I should ask that, or I should add to that.
I believe the car is still under that bumper-to-bumper or
powertrain.
5-year or 60,000-mile engine drivetrain warranty yet.
Did you take it in? Have you taken it
in? No, I haven't taken it in. I thought I'd talk to you because you seem very knowledgeable where you go to the dealer and they kind of bounce you around, you know.
Well, I think what you do is you call them, ask them how much a synthetic oil change is. You make an appointment. If that number's between $50 and $100, take it. So and then you take it in there and you say, oh, by the way, it's got a clatter first thing in the morning. And try to tell them how long the clatter lasts. So you hit the key, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, boom, it's gone. So I got a 3-second clatter. Would you look at that and see? Now, they and I both have huge encyclopedias available to us via a subscription. So my shop probably spends $500 a month to have access to these databases. So I punch in 2004 or 2014 Camry 3.5 liter, and I'd probably put the VIN in there, and then I'd do oil pressure. I'd search for the word oil pressure, or I'd search for the word clatter or clicking. Most people call it clicking, but it can be called clacking as well. So I would look through all of that, and I would see if anything pops up. Sometimes they have what they call a technical service bulletin. And the technical service bulletin says, if you have this, then here's the parameters that we find disagreeable. And if Terry has, drops below 8 pounds of oil pressure first thing in the morning, then we want you to pull the pan and replace this O-ring. So, but if Terry's clattering at 10 and 12 and it doesn't drop below 8, then forget it. So that's kind of what it is. Okay?
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, Terry. You're welcome. And we're going to go to Larry, and then we're going to go to Carrie, and then we're going to go to Freddie. But anyway, right now, Larry, you're up.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 98 Subaru Outback, 205,000 miles. I've owned it for the past 14 years. It's my going to the mountain car. We go up there year-round, skiing in the winter and everything. We love this vehicle. And it just started vibrating the front end. I took relatively new tires, took it in. I had it tires rotated and balanced. That seemed to help, and then it started vibrating again. I took it to my mechanic, who's been my mechanic for the last 20 years. He put it up on the rack. He said where the axle, and he showed me where the axle goes into the transfer case. He says, your transfer case is bad. First he told me, you know, wasn't worth repairing. Said he did some research. He wouldn't do the work, but he would send it out. Gave me an estimate of $1,800 for a rebuilt transfer case.
Okay.
I'm just wondering what any suggestions you might have, and at what point, as much as you love a vehicle, you just pull the plug.
Okay, how many miles? I missed that. How many miles are on it?
205,000.
Okay.
Regular maintenance. They put.
Okay, hold on. I need to ask questions.
Okay.
All right. So I want you to spend just a minute and describe the problem better. Is it a vibration on acceleration or deceleration? Is it a vibration on turn left or turn right? Is it a vibration that's there all the time? Is it speed related? Otherwise, the vibration is minimal at idle, and at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, it's bigger. So I want you to fit into those parameters real quick.
Okay. It seems like it vibrates more after I take my foot off of the gas pedal, as a car is slowing down.
Okay.
It's intermittent. Sometimes, you know, I took it on the freeway. Sometimes it'll vibrate at high speed, sometimes at low speed.
Okay.
And the steering wheel will just start shaking.
Okay. The steering wheel shakes left and right.
No, I haven't noticed that.
Okay. It shakes north and south. It has to do one or the other. The steering wheel shakes and doesn't move left or right,
or it
shakes and goes left or right.
Doesn't seem to go left or right. No.
Okay, so it's just probably okay. First of all, it's a sin against God for you to have one mechanic diagnose it and the other fix it, because if they don't fix it, you're fired up. But both of them are going to point the fingers at one another. You're going to deal with the shop that does it. You're going to deal with them yourself. Besides, you don't want somebody in the middle of that deal, because this could have been an $1,100 bid, and all of a sudden it grew to $1,800.
Okay.
Another thing I'm struggling with is the inside axle. Normally when the inside joint of the front axle goes bad, it has what comes with it is a bad oil leak. And you haven't said a word about that.
No, haven't noticed. So, I haven't noticed any oil leak.
Okay. So I'm kind of concerned about the diagnosis, and I would think that more would happen than just to lift it up in the air and point to the problem. I would be very unhappy if one of my senior guys did that. I would want them to drive it first.
He did drive it.
Okay. All right.
He did drive it, and I rode with him.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then he just lifted it up, and how long did it take him to point to the inner axles?
Oh, he looked at it for a while.
Okay. Okay. I like that better.
And then he called me. Then he called me out, and and he grabbed the axle and said, "Look at the play right here as it goes." You know.
Did he do both sides and look for play?
Yeah.
Okay, and you had some play on both sides?
I believe so.
Okay. I just think you need another opinion. Let me tell you a real quick story. I have breakfast with a bunch of car guys on Friday mornings. And this one car guy was telling me about this vibration he had. And it's a front-wheel drive. Now, I got to tell you, there's a hell of a lot of stuff moving on a front-wheel drive. So he replaced the outer joint of the axle. Then he replaced the axle. Then he replaced both axles. Then he did the wheel bearing. Then he did this. Then he did that. Then he did this. Then he did that. What do I think it is? And I said, you've replaced everything that moves in the front end, and you want me to tell you what you did wrong? I can't work through your eyes. Obviously, you've replaced everything but the car, and you still have this vibration. Does the steering wheel go left or right or up or down? He doesn't know. It's a noise. Okay, does the noise make left or right? No. It's there all the time. Then later, months later, he tells me, oh, I fixed it. It was the inner axle bearing. And I said, well, the inner axle bearing would have made a significant noise on a left or right turn. And it would have already been speed related, which you said it wasn't. So there was a lot of discrepancies in the way he did this. But he was working off YouTube University and all of his buddies. So everybody would guess on the Friday morning breakfast, and then he'd go home and do it. And I wouldn't play that game with him because he wanted me to guess what it is. And I said, I just need more information. And he wouldn't take it to the valley. So when you look at the big picture, I just want you to back up and just reevaluate where you were at and just go someplace else. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in Mesa. Okay. I know you mentioned Thompson Auto.
I think I would just take it to him and say, I can duplicate this problem. Would you, and not on Monday morning or Friday night, but would you loan me a technician? And I promise not to keep him very long, and I can duplicate the problem, and then I'm going to let him drive back. And then, you know, if it's okay with you, I'll sit in your lobby until you guys, you know, have a chance to look at it, or I'll have my wife pick me up or whatever. I think that's the kind of customer we all like. So I think that, and then you could say to him, up until the time you start diagnosis, you know, let me know when you're going to start the charge clock. And they may say, we're not going to charge the clock until we tell you. Or they may say, as soon as the car goes on the rack, we start the charge. But the test drive is part of the, you know, simple diagnostic, and we're blessed that you happen to be with it. So that's how I would do it. All righty.
Okay. So, and Mark, I hear you talk about automatic transmission exchange. As well, I'm just thinking in terms of the transfer case. Am I getting ahead of?
Well,
so you wouldn't recommend?
No, I wouldn't. It's you can't go in there and point at anything, because if you point at anything, you're going to misdirect them. The idea is here's what my car's doing. I can show it to you. You tell me what the fix is, and at the end of the day, you look them in the eye, you grit your teeth, and you say, "Are we guessing with your money? Is this a guess?" And if it's a guess, are we guessing with your money or mine? That's a very valid discussion to have. Now, when I come back, I'm going to describe when Salem Boys guesses and what it sounds like. But most of the time, 99% of the time, we ain't guessing, we're fixing. So if someone says that to me, look them in the eye, write down, we are fixing, and I sign my name to it and hand it to them. And then they know. We got to run. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about S&S Auto and Tire Service. They're on the west side, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a very deep, comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of many different sizes. So if you have any kind of needs, maybe you want a good, better, best estimate out the door, how much do I write my check for before you start working on my car, then you're at the right place. You can say to them, I've got a wheelbarrow, I've got a tractor, and here's the tire size I need. There's a good chance they're going to have that tire. So if you're looking for new tires on anything you own, S&S Tire locations in the valley are the place to go. However, they also do oil changes, suspension, alignments, and stuff that revolves around tires, shock absorbers and struts and stuff like that. So they do all kinds of that kind of stuff. Okay, we're talking about guessing.
Yeah, and Larry, I think the thing that confused me too is that he said that after they rotated
and balanced. You might have to turn up her mic.
Oh, turn up my mic, he says.
Oh. I'm going to have to turn up your mic, and so if you get your thing.
There you go, that's good.
Okay, Larry said, I thought he said, that after they rotated and balanced the tires, it was better on his vibration, and then after a certain amount of time, it went bad again, so that kind of confused me, too.
If you're right, and we'll leave it up to the audience to determine if you're right, because I missed that.
Okay.
If I missed it, then I'm sorry, but if that's the case.
Yeah.
He took it in, and he ended up with a alignment and balance and rotate the tires.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good chance he or his wife was diagnosed and it said, we want an alignment and a tire balance.
Right.
And then after that, it was aggravated. What that would mean, that would be a tire separation. We yeah. just moved the tire from the back where he could hardly discern it to the front where it became more obvious.
I don't know.
So
yeah.
those are, yes, you're exactly
but
right.
He didn't say alignment. He said rotate and balance. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes people will say rotate and balance it, and then mm-hmm. they'll come back in and say, well, I still have the vibration. And
right.
my response is we weren't working on a vibration. We did what you told us.
Exactly.
So your diagnosis is defective. Go talk to my wife, and I'm done with you. Mm-hmm. I'm just teasing,
yeah,
of course.
I know what you're
I'm
saying.
Just teasing. Okay, guessing and fixing. This is the deal. It is perfectly acceptable on a diagnostic start that they say, you need an inner axle, and we're going to replace your transfer case like Larry had. Larry should look him in the eye and says, so we're going to fix it. I need to make sure we're not guessing, and if we are guessing, whose money? Because the worst case scenario for Larry is he goes in and he spends the $1,800, $2,000 to have the transfer case replaced, and he has the same vibration or noise afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pay with a credit card, you can also stop payment on the credit card and let the credit card company get involved in your dispute. Usually they'll hold that money. And most of us aren't big enough, including the dealerships, to tell MasterCard or Visa or Discover to go pound sand.
Mm-hmm.
In our business, 90% or more of our business is paid with credit cards. So I'm just not going to try to tell them to. But so that's why you say, are we guessing or are we fixing? And if we're guessing, whose money are we guessing with? Now, Mrs. Jones comes into Salem Boys, my shop. I'll just call it my shop. She comes into my shop, and she says she's got an intermittent dying and stalling, and she has a little Chrysler K car. That was one from 20 years ago. So we look at it, and we can't find anything wrong, and it runs fine. So we call her up, and this is what I say to her. I can't find anything wrong, but I want you to hear about a guess that I'd like to make with your permission. The most common problem in this little K car is the distributor pickup assembly. Now, they make 5 different colors of these, and each one superseded the last one. So you have a white one, and the newest level is orange. So with your permission, I'm going to replace the white one that was 5 versions ago with the orange one. And that's going to cost you about $89 for the part, and probably somewhere in the vicinity of $65, $70 in labor. Now, Mrs. Jones, I want you to hear, I'm guessing, but I'm guessing with your money. You only have 2 other choices. You can start guessing and paying for educated guesses, or you can wait till it gets worse, perhaps dies, and doesn't restart. So, but I'm telling you, Mrs. Jones, I'm guessing, but I'm guessing with your money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a guess sounds like. No one's going to say, I'm guessing with a $3,000 transmission. That's why it's important for you to look him in the eye and say, so my symptoms are going to be gone when you're done, right?
2 minutes.
That's how it all works. That's what's important. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Car repair is kind of funny, but the most important part of the start of car repair is good communication with the service rider. And like I've said before 100 times, and I'm not disparaging guys because I am a guy, but the women do a much better job at the front counter than the men do. I enjoy talking to a lady because she'll make the noise, she'll answer my questions, and there's 3 answers. Yes, no, or I don't know, and men don't know the 3rd one. And so if I say, does it vibrate when you make a hard right turn, and he says yes and it doesn't, or if he says no and it does, that creates a problem. But ladies will say, I don't know. So that's not universal. It's just a trend I've noticed over 39 years of working on cars.
1 minute.
And with my own wife and my daughters.
Yeah.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I've heard you guys, years and years ago, you guys go in and tell them how to fix your cars. Then the shop foreman comes out to me and says, Renee wants me to do this, but really it needs this.
Mark, I never had a car that I took in anywhere. I've always told you what to fix.
Okay, I rest my
You've
case,
been
Perry
working
Mason.
On cars all
I rest
my
case, Perry Mason, because you just said I always you told you what to do.
Yeah, but you don't listen to me, so I know you didn't fix the right thing.
I don't really listen to anybody. I just want the symptoms, just the symptoms. What's it doing that's wadding up your underwear? That's all I want.
Okay.
So vibrations are hard, but does it shake the steering wheel north and south or left and right? Does it shake the seat of your pants? Can you see the seat next to you vibrating when it happens? Those are the kinds of questions we normally ask. Mm-hmm. But here's a phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let me talk about Strictly Diesel here real quick, because Strictly Diesel is for you Strictly Diesel guys. Nate is just one of the best diesel technicians I know. They do service, repair, they do parts, they work on foreign, domestic, listen to these words, light diesel, light-duty diesel trucks. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix. They're open Monday through Friday, but you can go to their website and find out a lot of diesel information. And they also sell competition parts. Otherwise, we can put a cold air kit on your car, and they discuss that on their website. So Nate and his staff are A1, A-plus kind of shops when it comes to Ford, Dodge, and Chevy diesels. So if you're looking for a good diesel guy, then Nate over at Strictly Diesel is a good place. Ken, you're up first. How can I help you?
Yeah, thank you. I have a 2000, or my wife has a 2000 Grand Marquis. Anytime you go to start the engine, it started when it's in park and you go to go start it, it either fights us or argues about going into reverse. It's been doing that for months and months, but eventually it gets back into reverse, and I'm just afraid we're going to strip some gears or something.
Okay, so you start it up, whether it's cold or hot, and you got your foot on the brake, and you put it into reverse, and exactly what happens?
It fights getting into reverse. It doesn't want to go into reverse, and then a lot of times you hit the brakes and it will eventually go in reverse. Or I'll shut the engine off and start it up again, then it will go in the reverse.
Okay. That's something that the shop's going to have to see.
I see.
There is a switch, the brake light switch, unlocks the shift lock. So I would try this. You're not making any noise, so it's not like you're stripping gears. There is no noise associated with this. You pull the transmission shifter towards you, and you can't. It feels solid, like it will not go into reverse.
That's right. You fight to get it in reverse at many times.
Okay. So what I want you to do is this, and I'm going to save you $75 in diagnostic time. You're going to get in there, and you're going to turn the key on and start the car. And then I want you to let go and hit the brake pedal three times hard and then hold it and see if it goes into reverse. If you say, Mark, if I don't fan the brake pedal, then it takes two or three efforts to get it into reverse or to get it unlock and go into reverse. But if I hit that pedal three times real hard and then I hold it, it does it every time, then the brake light switch is bad. So that's all. Now, I want you to move your seat up a click or two so you can really hit that pedal hard. You're not going to hurt anything. But the question is when you go to put it in reverse, it feels like that there's of a bar there. Otherwise, I can't shift it out of park. It just won't let me shift it out of park, and I hit something and I can't move. Well, that's the interlock. And so it's typically fixed by the replacement or adjustment of the brake light switch. So it could be an adjustment, something as easy as an adjustment. And if you were my customer and you walked in and told me that story, and if I hit it really hard, it always works. The adjustment, if you were a customer with 15 work orders, chances are you wouldn't be charged for that because we'd just send it out back and have one of the guys adjust the brake light switch and be done with it. But the rest of the time, if you do the good job in diagnosing it and you share your test with them, I'm thinking this is under $50 with no big deal at all. Okay?
Okay. It's been going on for months and months, and we've been fighting at things.
What part of town do you live in?
I live in Mesa, but I'll be happy to drive it at Mesa. But
I think
I just soon drive over to your shop. What's your shop address?
Well, we're on Warner and I-10, but can I send you to somebody closer, please?
Okay. What okay. would that be?
Thompson's Auto Repair. Okay.
Okay, I'd sooner leave it at that. I'll take it over to your place.
Okay, and that's fine. If you call Salem Boys Auto and ask for my daughter, Andy, she'll make an appointment for you. If you leave it overnight, that's even better. But if you don't, they'll be able to help you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Jerry, you're up next. Jerry, how can I help you?
Hello, Mark, and good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a 09 Durango, 152,000 miles on it. It's burning some oil, but that's not my issue. I have a hard 2-to-1 shift. So as you're coming up to a light and it downshifts, you hear it, you feel it. It's a clunk, and you're down in the first gear. Sometimes it does it, other times it doesn't.
Okay. All right. And the transmission been serviced lately, or how many times in the 152,000 miles?
Oh, 2 or 3.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. When you're coming to a stop, I want you to throw it into neutral before you come to a complete stop. And then when you come to a complete stop, I want you to drop it down in first. So as you're coming in to land,
right,
throw it up in neutral, mm-hmm, bring it to a
yep
stop, and then drop it to first, or go to drive, and then drop it even
right
lower than that. And then I want to know, does it do it more predominantly cold or hot or all the time?
Well, I haven't tried what you
two
said,
minutes,
but it doesn't really matter when you're driving it if it's hot or if it's cold doing the 2-to-1 clunk.
Okay. Okay.
I have noticed that sometimes that it won't even do the downshift. It will get stuck in second gear, and if you run the shifter up and down, sometimes you'll get it to pop, other times you won't. But then the next flight, she's good again.
Okay. Then I want you to also try to manually shift it everywhere, every time for a couple of days. So when you come up
okay
to a stop, I want you to drop it in low. Then I want you to take off. Click. Click. I want you to manually shift it up and down, and that will help in the diagnostic procedure. If you say it shifts perfectly up and down. Otherwise, I'm coming to a stop, I drop it to 3, then I drop it to 2, and when I drop it to 1, I'm still kind of rolling, and it always goes to 1. You see my point?
Okay.
Where before, it doesn't always go to 1, you say I'm stopping in 2. So that
right
helps the diagnostic process, is manually take control of the transmission manually and see what happens. But to answer your question bluntly, I don't know what it is. I just don't know, but you could call Phil over at Automatic Transmission Exchange and explain it to him, and I think he would have a better idea of what it is than I do.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very
fair
much. All righty, Jerry. And we're going to take a break real quick, and when we're going to come back, and Mike, you're going to be our first and only call, but if you have a question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repairs, I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983. I've known Tom since the early 80s. I've respected him. He's the kind of guy you'd want as your next-door neighbor. There's nothing fishy about him. What you see is what you get. And when I say fishy, that's a play on word because he's a fisherman. He is a world-class fisherman. And so he's a great guy, but he also has a BMW certified technician there, a master tech on BMW. So if you have a Beamer and you're looking for a good shop, certainly anybody can change the oil, but if you've got a problem with the Beamer and you don't want to take it anywhere else, then may I suggest that you go to Action Auto Repair, northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after 11 o'clock, and I'm going to talk as fast as I can because I want to talk about Auto Dynamics in Sun City. It's the largest, most trusted source for complete auto repair. Family-owned and operated since 1982. They're on their second generation. Chuck started it. Derek, his son, now runs it. And frankly, Derek's doing a better job than Chuck. Nevertheless, they have quality service. They stand behind their work. And everything about the process is exactly what you would expect it to be. And here's this kind of a nifty thing he's trying. He does not pay his mechanics or his staff a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, he can ensure that they won't sell you unnecessary parts or repair. It's kind of a nifty study, and all of us are watching real close on how that works out. So if you want, if you need a spot in Sun City, Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Mike, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Yeah, I have a, I got a 2006 Kia Spectra. It's got about 120,000 miles on it. And I'm having a brake issue. When I go to stop the car, like 30, 40 miles an hour, the car kind of jerks forward and back, kind of like pulsates.
Okay.
Like maybe one of the rotors is warped or something. We took the tires off. We looked at the brake pads. All the pads look fine. I'm thinking that I have a warped rotor on one of the wheels.
On 30 miles an hour is quite different than 65 or 70, yes?
Well, as I, as you're slowing down and you apply the brakes, brake pedal, then it kind of just like lunges forward and it stops and lunges forward.
Okay, but again, is it different at 20 as opposed to 70? Is it more?
No,
it harsher?
Does it, it. I just notice it more as I'm slowing down the light. Even when I like on the highway and I put apply the brakes, it still does it.
Okay, is it a brake pedal pulsation?
Not through the pedal, just the whole car.
Okay. Well,
kind of like it's grabbing and then it's letting go and it grabs and lets go.
I know, but you're not describing it in terms that we're going to be familiar with. A brake pedal pulsation, you can feel the pulsation in your foot, which I think is what you're describing. But
I guess you'd be right, yeah.
Okay.
Something like that, yep.
That typically, now, you can go 45 miles an hour. Do you have a parking brake on the car that you use ever?
There is a parking brake, okay. But I don't use it.
All righty, that's okay. So go 40 miles an hour, nobody's around you, Sunday morning, your wife's still asleep, and then pull the parking brake on it and see if don't hit the brake pedal, but pull the parking brake and see if the pulsation is there. That tells you it's in the rear brakes. So then, but this is a pretty easy one for a shop to diagnose because they're going to put a dial indicator on the front rotors. And if we've got a 30-thousandths variation on one of the rotors, then that's the pulsation. Now, the question is do we cut the rotor or do we replace the wheel bearings that could cause the same problem? So that's what we have to do. But it could be a rotor, and we're going to typically turn both of them, and we're going to take the minimal amount of metal off just to get it straight. And we're also going to make sure that the rotor sits up against the hub flange and that there's not a bunch of dirt back there, because if there's a dirt between those two mating surfaces, it's going to cause the rotor to wobble. But if we just take the rotor off and we go, oh, well, here's half of Arizona, we blow it all off, put the rotor back on, pulsation gone. So those are the kind of things that – but if you can take them for a ride, but if you use right terminology – I can close my eyes and I hit the brake. I not really close my eyes, but I hit the brake and I can feel the pedal pulsate. If that that's what you're talking about, then yes, you're right. The rotor is the problem. Okay?
Yeah, I just remember the whole car did it, but it does come up through my foot. Yeah,
okay. All righty. Well, that's what normally we call it, and that'll help focus them in if it's true. But thank you very much. Brake pedal pulsates. And I got to get that on my log. Celso, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Oh, I have a 2006 Sienna van.
Okay.
Okay. And what's happening is when I press on the gas, it kind of hesitates. A split second hesitation, then it goes.
Okay.
Yeah. Last year it had a recall about a solenoid something, I forgot. But the problem disappeared for a while. Then it came back again.
Okay.
Now it's having all the time. It's happening all the time now.
All right. If it was, if it's exactly the problem before the recall was performed, then I would think you would go back to them and you would say to them, here's my story. I have a hesitation on throttle up. I have a hesitation when I first give it gas. This is a hesitation I had before you did the recall. The good news is I didn't have the hesitation at all until recently, and it just came back. I would like very much for you to reevaluate the recall procedure, but before you spend more than, let's say, $50 of my money, I want you to call me. So what you're saying to them is I want you to look to see your work was right. I want you to follow the procedures. I want you to make sure this isn't a derivative or a cause or a problem created by the recall. And but I want you to also, and you got to give them a little bit of money, but you say, I'm going to draw the line at $40 or $50, so call me after that and see what happens.
Okay.
But I think the key here, Celso, is I had the hesitation. The recall fixed it. Now the hesitation's back. I think that 1, 2, 3 is going to be important to them. Now, if they've had other people come in with the same problem, they may not already know the fix, and they'll smile, pat you on the back, I hope, and just say, we'll take care of this. That's the best you can hope for, okay?
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And Dom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. A 2016 Hyundai Santa Fe with 34,000 miles on it. When you hit the brakes, it wants to stop so abruptly it's going to launch you through the window.
Okay.
It's real, real hard to avoid that. It just stops on the dime.
Okay.
Reverse or forward.
And is it something that's been there for a long time or something that just started?
It's been there since I purchased the car with 24,000 miles on it.
And it's a 2016?
Yes.
And how many miles has it got now?
34.
Okay.
Can't figure it, and the dealer knows nothing about why it stops so abruptly.
Okay. You know, is it possible that the seat's... I know this sounds stupid, but is the seat too far forward? Because that will affect how much braking pressure you give it. So my question to you is back the front seat off one click and see what happens. But here's what I'm thinking out loud. If you've gone 10,000 miles or more on this vehicle and you've had this the brakes are working too doggone good, if there was a problem, we would have worn the pads away on the inboard pad if the caliper was hanging up. If the wheel bearings were bad, we'd have a brake pulsation. You don't smell anything, which means the brakes aren't locking up. They're not getting hot. So you're missing so many of the symptoms that would otherwise suggest a defect in the braking system. The only thing you've got is this stops on a dime. And the question would then, and most power brake cars are going to stop on a dime with 45 to 65 pounds of foot pressure. Boom, we stop on a dime. So I'm just, first of all, I don't think it's a brake issue, but I don't know how to explain it. But I just say, let's pull the seat back one click. Maybe your knee is bent. Maybe when you straighten your leg, you're trying to lock your knee inadvertently. And I talk about this in this fashion. I've been a mechanical expert for all the car companies. And I remember a case like this where the customer was unhappy because the brake system worked too well. And when I drove with them, I noticed that the lady would push the brake and then she'd go a little extra just to lock her knee. And yes, it kind of brought the car to a stop a little extra quick. The nose would dive, the back end would rise. So I asked her if we could take a break, and I moved her seat back a notch, and then we went and rode it again. She goes, "What'd you do?" And I said, "Okay, I mean, just made an adjustment underneath the hood."
Well, that would be nice, except that anybody who drives it has the same experience. Okay. Men, women.
Dom, I've never heard of this before. I've never, in 39 years, I've never had anybody say the brakes are too touchy, the brakes work too fast and too hard. I guess you, what part of town do you live in? I'll arrange for a free test drive. Where are you at?
I'm in Sun Lake.
Okay.
Chandler.
Okay. All right. Have you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay. 1025 West Warner.
Uh-huh. Alma School in Warner.
No, sir. No. No. It's, you know, where the IKEA store is as you come up from Sun Lakes.
Yes.
You're going to turn right and go a mile, and it's on the right. It's 1025 West Warner in Tempe. I'm sorry. I should have said Tempe.
That's your shop, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, I got it.
All right. And so what you're going to do is you're going to talk to my daughter, Andy, and I'm going to have the very one of the very best technicians who's been with me for 29 years. He's a master tech. He is a wizard. But he's going to take your car for a ride, and he's going to determine whether or not something needs to be done or not. That's the best I can offer you, and I'll do it for free.
What a deal.
And you're so not going to have them. Now you're not going to have Eddie for 45 minutes as you and him go bar hopping. You understand that, right?
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
he's a great technician. And
well, you know, Mark, I had a 2012, same car, same engine, same everything. It didn't do that. It was perfect.
Okay, but did the 2012 have rear drums, or did it have disc all the way around?
Don't know.
And see, this could have disc all the way around. And the 2012 may have had drums. Now, the drums are really not efficient, as well as disc brakes are. So, Eddie, you can ask Eddie, does my 12 have a different brake system than my 16? Would you check to see if the rear drums, if it has shoes on the back and pads on the front, and if it changed? And if he says no, both models had disc, then my hypothesis goes out the window.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
All right. And don't you forget to call Andy and tell her that.
Okay.
All right? And, sir. And his name is Dom.
Dom. Okay.
That means he's probably Italian.
And, I don't know.
And it could very well mean he knows mobsters.
Mark,
and so tell
stop.
Eddie.
Stop.
Just teasing. Oh, man, you get like touchy. I think you're not going to be on the show anymore. That's what I think.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, lucky you. So you can go. You know what, folks? You have to feel sorry for me. I woke up this morning at 6 o'clock, took the dogs out. You woke up at 7:30, and we immediately went garage sailing.
You didn't have to go.
Yeah. Okay, I can sit. But I do go.
Yes.
And who bought the most?
Let me just...
Too
what?
Much.
That.
What are you talking about?
You bought the most stuff. I bought two things, and you bought six or seven.
Wait a minute. Here, folks, we'll let them be the judge and the jury. She won't let me take her Dyson vacuum out to my workshop that has a carpet in it to let me clean the carpet, even though my responsibility is to clean the vacuum after its use. So I found this cheap vacuum cleaner that has kind of a nifty collection thing, and it was $15. I whittled him to $12, and I bought the vacuum cleaner so that I didn't have to use your new Dyson in my workshop out in the barn.
Yeah, most
so
people,
you are very,
most women wouldn't let you
so
vacuum
here's the
their
answer.
Shop
here's
with
the answer.
Their nice vacuum.
I'm going to give you the one I bought for $12, and I'm taking your Dyson.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
We'll fight about that later.
Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a car question, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Mark is with the K. Salem like the cigarettes. Mark at MarkSalem.com.
1 minute.
If you give me your year, make, and model and the miles, let's stick to the symptoms. And if you'd give me a phone number, I typically will call you because I'll have some questions. And it'll be from a blocked cell phone line, as you would expect. So I understand that most of you don't answer that, but I'll usually call the first time, leave a message, and tell you I'm going to call back. And so that's usually what I do. But anyway, what I'd like you to do is remember... You ask them, is that maintenance called for in my owner's manual? And let's look at the owner's manual together. And oftentimes you'll see the service writer bail out of that conversation because your transmission service is due at 80 and he's trying to sell it to you at 30. So that's why looking at the owner's manual is an important part of maintenance. What does the owner's manual say? And don't let him tell you that the owner's manual is not written for Arizona because that's just a big line of BS. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Thank you very much. Wear your seatbelt. God bless you. And I'll see you next Saturday right here at 10 o'clock.